I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that. They're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me, and the fact that day in and day out, for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even in commentary. Nobody can touch me.
Here with a brand new episode of CM2's Wrestling Reviews, right here on the Absolution Network. And this time out, we continue WrestleMania month as we take a look at the 20th anniversary of the Show of Shows, where it all begins again. That's right, it is WrestleMania 20. Right here on the CM2's Wrestling Reviews, and my god, I am excited for this, and quite frankly glad to finally be recording this, as I've been trying for several days. But 20th anniversary, the third WrestleMania to take place at Madison Square Garden, you know, with 1, 10, and 20, and also the fourth of five to take place in the New York metropolitan area, being 1, WrestleMania 2 took place in the area, though not at Madison Square Garden. I want to say it was Long Island or somewhere different. I couldn't remember. Then you, of course, had WrestleMania 10, which we reviewed last time out. Or not last time out, but two episodes ago. Yeah, WrestleMania 20 here. And then you have WrestleMania 29. So, a lot to look forward to. And we have 12 matches on the card. So much to look forward to. Before I get into that, though, we do have some news items to go over. Actually, I was just recently, as of last night, on the WrestleCast, as of this recording. I got called in last moment. So it's going to be a lot of the same things you would have heard there, but I think more me, to put it in a quite frankly term. So to go down the list, of course, the unfortunate news that happened at the beginning of this week, or I think it was like soon after I released my last episode, was the unfortunate death of the Spanish, the Mexican wrestler whose name I do know, but I have such a problem pronouncing it, I don't want to mispronounce it and offend anybody. But the one that involved with Rey Mysterio, which is a quite frequent thing, and a lot of people got into heart about it, and to hell, by the way, with the people who want to sit there and say that Rey Mysterio was a murderer, because, I mean, this was an absolute freak accident. Nobody's fault, it's an accident. This is what happens sometimes. And you know, I am a bit cautious because I don't want to underestimate a prosecutor who may see the ability to get his name out there and get fame and fortune. Because, you know, fame and fortune sometimes is always the enemy of good. But at the same point in time, I have a hard time seeing, especially with the family, having Rey being one of the pallbearers, that them seeing him responsible. I think the next news item is definitely also Brock Lesnar's recently re-signing with the WWE. I did get to see finally the ESPN interview, and I liked it. I made the joke last night that it's the best damn promo Brock Lesnar's ever done, which in a way it is. You know, the first time Brock Lesnar really kind of seemed human to me, so I give him that. I mean, he definitely spoke from the heart, and you can definitely feel it. Though I didn't kind of like the only thing I really didn't like in any way is the whole little boasting, yeah, I'm going to work part-time for full-time pay. It's like, really? Really? Oh, that's great of you. And especially after this past Monday Night Raw, where what did they do with Reigns? Tug of war with him and Lesnar? It's like, I made the joke, like, somewhere, Bryan Daniels and John Cena are looking at each other like, we're giving up our main event spots for this. But it is the thing, you know, they have him. I would really hope that Reigns does win it. And there's a variety of things that I think would be interesting. But if they're going to keep it simple, I hope it is that Reigns gets the title. Because, plain and simple, regardless of what happens, the title needs to be defended on a regular basis. There needs to be a story behind it. Right now, the WWE World Heavyweight Championship isn't anything special. And that's the wrong thing to be for that title. That's supposed to be the title. That's supposed to be the title that everybody wants to go for. And right now, it doesn't feel like the title anybody wants to go for. You know, this is what hurts boxing promotions. And this is what hurts, you know, UFC is, honestly, what does everybody enjoy seeing and want to see? They want to see the undercard fights, the middleweights, the lightweights. Nobody wants to see the heavyweights. One of the things that has made WWE and wrestling so successful is people want to see the heavyweights. They want to see the best of the best go against, and that's what wrestling gives them. If Brock Lesnar's champion and he's only defending it every so often, that doesn't make the title special. That makes it lose its luster. Why is anybody going to care for a title that isn't defended on a regular basis? And that's the fact of it. You know, Eddie Guerrero, as we see winning the title, and as we saw a couple episodes back when I reviewed that No Way Out, him winning that title from Lesnar was due in part of Lesnar having to defend it, or in being a match of importance to where at least was there and had a presence. And so, at that point, Brock Lesnar did feel like a beast, and that's the biggest difference of Lesnar of then and now, is with all due respect to Brock Lesnar, yes, he's a UFC champion. Yeah, he suplexed John Cena 18 times in a match that... I've talked about the match. The plain simple truth is that I did not believe that match at all. I had no belief in that match. I mean, it just seemed like they told John Cena just lay down for Lesnar. Now, the match that happened afterwards was more believable, but again, because Lesnar hasn't been there, Lesnar has no presence. With all due respect to Paul Heyman, and Paul Heyman does wonderful promos, it doesn't change the fact that if the champion isn't there and he doesn't have a presence and he isn't constantly at least, I mean, hell, at the very least, give him a squash match. Have him squash like 3 rookies. But have him do something so his presence is there. Because his presence isn't. I don't care what anybody says, the fact of the matter is, his presence isn't on WWE TV. And it doesn't make the title, you know, it makes you wonder, why is Reigns and Daniel going after this title? It really does. So, you know, I think it is a good move for the WWE to re-sign him, because I'm not denying that he doesn't have any value, but if he's only wrestling 3 or 4 times a year, you know, that value, I think, is diminished. He has to have some... I mean, if he wants to wrestle like the big shows, fine, but he shouldn't be champion then. And I think more than just me have said this. So, it's definitely something that needs to be looked at. And I really hope Reigns, at the very least, Reigns wins. Whether it be cleanly, whether it be a turn on Heyman, whether he wins and then Rolling cashes in. I know we've talked about it, the idea that, you know, Rollins and Reigns and Ambrose, you know, Ambrose wins the Intercontinental title, Reigns wins the heavyweight title, and Rollins about to cash in, but then turns on Triple H, and in the past like 6 to 7 months has all been revealed to be a setup. Which would be very interesting to be very Shield-like and make that group even more popular and really build that group. Because it would be something controversial, I think. So, you know, just main thing. But regardless, the one thing I do not want to see is Lesnar leaving WrestleMania with a title. I just don't. It's... I'm not going to sit here and say that I'm going to give up the network, because I'm not. Nobody is. Anybody who says that is just trying to sound threatening, and we don't sound threatening. But it's one of those things that's just going to... You know what it is going to affect? It's going to affect whether I watch Raw. That's what's been affected most. It's like, I really don't care anymore if I'm watching Raw or SmackDown. And that should be the thing. Part of what pay-per-views are supposed to do is make me want to watch the product on the week to see what happens. And I don't care. I've lost care. They can change that by Lesnar losing the title, quite frankly, among other things. You know, there, the other things are Rusev can't leave with the U.S. title. And Wyatt has to come out looking strong whether he wins or loses. So, and you know, I'm not going to give a preview. I mean, you guys know the matches. I'm probably going to have more of a review on the next episode where we review our final WrestleMania, which we will be recording on Monday. So, there's just, quite frankly, I think there's at least a decent card here. I like it better than last year's card. I just hope that maybe they'll surprise us and have more, it be very wrestling focused. But with that being said, let's talk about a WrestleMania that's very wrestling focused, as we are reviewing WrestleMania 20. As I give you the rundown of the tape, you know, with WrestleMania 20 has the tagline of "Where It All Begins Again," with theme songs by Drowning Pool of Step Up and Godsmack of their song Duce. Presented by the WWE with the brands of Raw and SmackDown. WrestleMania 20 takes place on March 14th, 2004, to an attendance of 18,000. Though there's also other numbers that say more than 20,000 were part of it. But 18,000 was the official attendance of Madison Square Garden in New York City, New York. Eric Cullen commentators are Jerry the King Lawler and Jim Ross for Raw, Michael Cole and Taz for SmackDown. Ladies and gentlemen, let's get into WrestleMania 20. Sunday Night Heat. Of course, this was before the whole 2-hour pre-show that we have now. Thank God. Not thank God for the pre-show. Thank God back then there were no pre-show. It was all about WrestleMania. And we have 12 matches to talk about, so we have a full card. So, our first match of the night is for the WWE United States Championship. And we have John Cena challenging the United States champion, The Big Show. I want you to take a wild guess what I thought about this match. Oh yeah, I loved it. I mean, I am a John Cena mark, and you know what? This is his WrestleMania debut, and you know what? It was a really good, solid opening match. Really had shades of Hogan and Andre in it. There were a lot of spots that, seemed like they were lifted from that match. And by the way, I liked it because, again, I liked that match. And again, it, I guess foreshadowing of what John Cena would become. But, you know, outside of that, I really, really enjoyed everything about this match. I mean, it was a great back-and-forth contest. Big Show really looked like a threat. I mean, we make jokes about Big Show now, but you know what? I really think that Big Show's prime was definitely during this time of 2003, 2004, 2005. I mean, he kept himself relevant during this time period. Really up till, I would say, about 2 years after WrestleMania 27. Because when he added the knockout punch, that definitely did add a different element to him. I think it's only like the past 3-4 years he's gone on his downhill. But at this point, he was still a very good competitor. And you know what? It was a great showcase for the up-and-coming John Cena to battle against. And, you know, the first FU, by the way, that he does the Big Show, really impressive, gets him up on his knees. And then, of course, you know, mind you, I think this will be the first and last time we will ever hear, well, you know, we do. We do hear a New York crowd in Royal Rumble 2008. But it's like, you had to hear a, like, all-pro John Cena crowd after all the years of, let's go Cena, Cena sucked. You know, it's kind of quite refreshing, actually. And kind of why we point to, yeah, like, can't we return John Cena to this? You know. But anyways, so it's Big Show with those knocks. And then I think that's the more impressive FU is the second time. Because they did a great job of showcasing Big Show really wearing on John Cena. And while the first one was amazing, to be able to do it a second time, it's just, I mean, it's the scary strength of John Cena, quite frankly. And just a really great match. And your new United States champion, John Cena, the Doctor of Thugonomics, and I'm a very happy boy, yes. Our next match is, it kind of find it funny, because we talk so far, for a lot of people, the pay-per-view of the year so far is Wrestle Kingdom 9, which, yeah, was only like on the second day of the year, but so far, we haven't had WrestleMania yet, and that's the one. That's one that set the bar for the year. And I find it funny that had a fatal four-way tag team match to start it off. Didn't have it here, but the past 2 years at WrestleMania, this year and the year before, we started off with, or at least one of the starting matches was a fatal four-way tag team match. And at this WrestleMania, we had not one, but two, and this is the first of them, a fatal four-way tag team match for the World Tag Team Championship. We have Garrison Cade and Mark Jindrak versus the Dudley Boys versus La Resistance of Rene Dupree and Rob Conway versus Booker T and Rob Van Dam. Now I'm going to sit here and say this, and I'll get to why the other one doesn't work somewhat better, but the fact of the matter is, this is really just to get everybody involved, and I don't think either of the tag team matches were really good as far as the tag team championship matches. I really don't remember much of Garrison Cade. I remember Garrison Cade more when he had his other partner, whose name I'm blanking on, but it was that whole, he was the Southern Redneck, he was the Cowboy, and that thing. That tag team worked much better. And Mark Jindrak is a decent wrestler, but just, their tag team just seems so generic and so put together. And in a way, Booker T and RVD had the same feel in a certain way, but they worked a whole lot better, and I could believe in them more. I really think this should have been, a triple threat, if not just a one-on-one. I would have loved to see RVD and Booker T versus the Dudley Boys, but they wanted to get Resistance and Garrison Cade and Mark Jindrak into the match. So I think what would have made this match better is if it had just been a one-on-one tag team contest. Because that would have been an epic confrontation. RVD and Booker T versus the Dudley Boys. Two men who have experience with great tag teams of, you know, Booker T and RVD versus the ultimate tag team, the Dudley Boys. So, you know, and for what it is, it's, I guess, okay, but I felt really bored with it, so. And I hate saying that about a Dudley Boys match, quite frankly. I really do. So I just kept looking forward to the end of the match, and, you know, it, great end, chaos outside the ring. RVD comes in and hits the frog splash, gets the 1-2-3. And still your world tag team champions for Raw, Booker T, and RVD. Now, our next match was really, really good. And had a was really personal. It rolled the whole story around Trish Stratus. As we have Chris Jericho versus Christian. This, I really feel, is the match in which Christian stepped out of the shadow of Edge and Christian, of being a tag team. And by the way, later on that night, we would have a promo for a returning Edge. Of course, he would return and then immediately be swamped with the controversy of him and Lita and Matt freaking Hardy. Would that take place a year later? I think it took place a year later. I'm sorry. Because I'm trying to think about that, and that would happen, yeah, over a year, because again, the whole Matt Hardy Edge thing would happen at SummerSlam. I'm wrong. Anyways, this was a really good match, a good solid 15 minute match back and forth between Christian and Jericho, just two good Canadian wrestlers putting on a show. Chris Jericho being Jericho, and like I said, Christian really stepping out from underneath the whole, really, he's a single wrestler that's really was better as a tag team wrestler stigma that he had, because again, he tagged because of Edge and Christian, and because of the tag team that he was in with Chris Jericho for over the past year. And this is where, really, I think Captain Charisma was born. And it's really interesting to see that. And again, a great back and forth contest. One thing I like is you could see where they kind of, you know, botched on some things, but it never was too obvious. And they really did a good job of recovering, and they had this great chemistry together. And then, of course, the ending, the, you know, the only thing I have about the ending is, even though Trish turns on Chris Jericho after the match, slaps him, and ends up with Christian, wouldn't that have been better, like, during the match? Because that's the one thing I have a problem with. I think storyline-wise, it would have been better if Trish, you know, cost Jericho the match, and then when he's asking why, she slaps him and ends up with Christian. That, I thought, would have been a much better end to the match, considering that it's a roll-up that is, and the whole thing is, you know, Jericho goes to Christian brings Trish into the ring, slams her down, Jericho goes to check on her, she hits him with an elbow that you think is accidental, and Christian gets the roll-up. Well, if that's what the finish is going to be, it would have been better if she would have gotten involved and like, actually turned on him there, I think. But, you know, semantics. It still was such a wonderful match, and I just had a great time watching it. Our next match was a match that went a bit too long, and just, yeah, could have been better. This was not the Rock at the top of the game. For all the fans of the Attitude Era, we have Evolution of Randy Orton, Batista, and Ric Flair versus The Rock and Sock Connection of The Rock and Mick Foley. Now, ladies and gentlemen, if you thought John Cena's pop was huge at the beginning of the night, I present to you the pop for Mick fucking Foley. The second time, and not the last time, of the night that the roof will blow off Madison Square Garden. And, of course, The Rock came out, and he got a big ticket. Again, it was Rock and Sock Connection. And, of course, New York loves the Rock and Sock Connection. And you know what? It just, it was too patterny. You know, Mick Foley went in, and he would run wild for a bit before getting beat down by Evolution. Then he'd tag in The Rock, and he'd run wild. And then he would... then he would get beat down, and he would tag Foley in, and team back and forth, and you say, well, isn't that what wrestling is? But yeah, but it's like, they went back and forth way too much. You know, they're sort of like, you know, you had the one wrestler who finally gets caught and gets put in the corner, and the part of the whole match is him getting punishment and leading to him getting the hot tag to the other wrestler, and that sets up the sort of build up to the end. And that's why I say this match just feel like it went too long. Like, I feel like they could have cut a good 4 minutes out of this match, and it would have felt better, I thought. They could have had the same ending, it would have felt better. And mind you, the ending as well, I just don't get. I mean, I understand you want to prop Randy Orton up, but at the same point in time, it's like... And again, talk about setting up the RKO out of nowhere. You know, him countering Mr. Sacco with the RKO. But, you know, it's just... I would have liked to see in this storyline Mick Foley get his comeuppance. That's one of the things I just don't like about this storyline. And quite frankly, I think this is, you know, is in the bottom rank of the match. It's not the worst match of the night. Those are saved for one other match that we'll talk about a little bit in the tag team championship matches. Yeah. Now, our next match, however, though, I thought would be one of the worst matches of the night, but pleasantly surprised me. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a Playboy evening gown match where Tori Wilson and Sable, the recent Playboy cover girls from the WWE, faced off against Stacy Keibler and Miss Jackie. The whole storyline revolving around Stacy Keibler, who's got legs and she knows how to use them. And Miss Jackie arguing that they should have been the cover girls. You know you're in for a good night when they decide to... When two Playboy cover girls decide to alter the match before it even begins. It's like, you know, I feel a little constricted in my clothes and we're going to lose them anyway, so why don't we just strip down right now? And whoo! But by the way, before I go any further, as far as comedic calls of the evening, Call of the Night by Michael Cole and Taz. My God, I can watch the match just for their call, because I was laughing so hard. It's like, God damn it. But speaking of God damn it, got it, Sable, Black, and starter belts and stockings. Oh my. How the hell did Brock Lesnar get that? I'm still asking this goddamn question. How the fuck did that motherfucker get that? I'm asking. I want somebody to answer me that. Because nobody's been able to answer me that question. And then Tori Wilson, she's got pink. I love pink. I love pink and white. No, she's got white. I love pink. I love white. I love black. I love all the colors when they're on them, because they can wear tie-dye and it will look, oh my God, sexy. And then Stacy Keibler, I'm like, yeah, George Clooney's tapping that. God, well, was tapping that. God fucking damn it. And Miss Jackie, pretty cute. I mean... That tells you how gorgeous a woman, when Miss Jackie, who's a pretty beautiful woman, if I might say myself, is the ugly one of the quadruplet. Though some might say argue that Sable was, but, you know, semantics. You know, at the end of the day, though, the match was fun. They put on a good, solid match. It was very enjoyable. I mean, nobody flubbed completely. One of my favorite moments was the, you know, Jack Doan getting rolled over and then rolled back over. And he's like, it wasn't me. And he's got this little secret, like, smile that you can see. Like, you motherfucker. You motherfucker. It's like, Mick, like, I never thought I'd say this, but I want to be Jack Doan right now. It's like, yes, yes, yes. And then, of course, that ending with the roll-up and the spanking and the booty shot. I do wonder if Tori get a little stern talking to, because she pulled it up a bit too much. I wonder if there was any wrath from that. I'd be interested, if anybody knows. Because that was like, is she pulling her underwear up a bit too much? And by up, I mean down. Because again, it's a roll-up, and Jackie's on her back, and her legs are sprayed, spread eagle, open, and, well, put in a better word, Tori Wilson is pulling the tights, but in this case, it's pulling down the tights. In this case, the tights are the underwear, and you get the picture. While it says Tori Wilson and Sable defeated Stacy Keebler and Miss Jackie, I think we can all sit here and say, whether you're a man or woman, we all won with this match. Our next match would be the Cruiserweight Open for the WWE Cruiserweight Championship, as you have Chavo Guerrero Jr., the Cruiserweight Champion, with Chavo Classic, versus Ultimo Dragon, Shannon Moore, Jamie Noble, Funaki Nunzio, Billy Kidman, Rey Mysterio, dressed as The Flash, Tajiri, and Akio. And you know what? I really enjoyed it. This was fast-paced. You know what? It was a perfect showcase for the Cruiserweights. If nobody had seen the Cruiserweights before, I would definitely show them this match, because it gave you all these little short, like, almost vignettes of each wrestler. And, like, certain wrestlers, you know, Ultima Dragon definitely had a good showing. Jamie Noble had a terrific showing in this match. So did Billy Kidman. Rey Mysterio just showcased why he was the top cruiserweight of the division, and Tajiri had a good showing as a heel, with Chavo, you know, ultimately cheating to win. But it was very fast paced. I mean, the sunset flip bomb by Mysterio and Kidman was amazing. It made the crowd pop out of its seat. And just, again, like I said, fast-paced and just high-flying action. I mean, you had the shooting star press. That's like, oh my god. I'm so glad Billy Kidman didn't kill himself on that. And so just a great match all around. I would have loved to see, you know, again, this is an instance where there are certain matches that I feel they went too long. The match after this definitely, I felt, could have cut 3 minutes. Evolution could have cut 3 minutes, or 3 or 4 minutes for that matter. And trying to look, and yeah, put that, you could have given like at least 5 more minutes by doing that to this match, and I think it would have been that's something that could have helped it. But for what it is, it was a great showcase for the Cruiserweights and just a very enjoyable match. I would have liked to have seen Rey Mysterio win the Cruiserweight title back here. That's the other thing. Because again, it's that whole heroes. And mind you, usually I do talk about booking. There really doesn't seem to be any booking, or at least any clues to bookings. And that can sometimes be a good thing or a bad thing. The bad thing is that, you know, you like to see a story run through your booking. At the same point in time, the good thing is that if you make the decision not to do that and you want to hide something and you want to keep people guessing, you know, you don't really have that. And so there's the good side of that and the bad side about that. And I think with this pay-per-view, it's actually more towards the good, because it definitely would, I think, while watching this, it would have kept you on your toes. Now, our next match is probably the most controversial of the night, as we have Bill Goldberg face Brock Lesnar with Stone Cold Steve Austin as the special guest referee. Now, this match lasted 13 minutes and 42 seconds. It should have lasted no more than 7. Ultimately, the problem is that this match was way too slow for who the competitors were. It's like they tried to, like, they're just like an epic confrontation of epic wrestlers, when in reality, what you had was you had two powerhouses going up against each other. You know, this is why the Batista, Umaga match, or for that matter, the Bobby Lashley Umaga match worked so much better. Because they were powerhouses and they just went at each other. And that's the thing, is you have these wrestlers, they're just dancing around like each other, and it's like, get on with it. And it's like, this is ultimately, I think, why the crowd turned on the match. Because they were bored. And it's like, we want to see two motherfuckers beat the shit out of each other, and they're dancing. We don't want you to dance, monkeys. We want you to fucking fight. We want to see who's going to step up to use the title of one of the WrestleMania theme songs. And it's like, had so much potential, and I think it let down people so much. You know, here's the thing about it is, in this case, the slowness comes from Brock Lesnar. One, Brock Lesnar's the one who didn't seem like he wanted to be there. Two, Goldberg is a counter-wrestler, and Brock Lesnar is an offensive powerhouse. So in any confrontation, Lesnar's the one that needs to initiate the action for Goldberg to counter. That's the thing. So it really relied on Lesnar to initiate and lead the match. And he really never did that, partially because he wasn't in there. And as such, you can see there was no chemistry. And it was a boring, slow match. And everybody booed it. Quite frankly, I don't think it's the worst WrestleMania match of all times. Because, I mean, there's some solid work in there when stuff does happen. I think, though, it is one of the most disappointing WrestleMania matches of all time. Because, again, and I think everybody knows the story. You know, Lesnar was leaving after this. So was Goldberg soon after this. Though, if both of them had decided, you know, screw it, we're leaving. Let's put on the match of our lives. Maybe things would have been better, and maybe they would have come back or something like that. So, I mean, yeah, Lesnar's back, but only after 5 years. So, yeah, a very disappointing match. Thankfully, not as far as the next match, but thankfully the main events of this evening and other matches that we've already talked about definitely helped keep, you know, the energy and, you know, put this WrestleMania on its back to make it good. Our next match, though, however, doesn't really do that, because after this match, we have yet another Fatal 4-Way Tag Team match, for this time for the WWE Tag Team Championships, as the world's greatest tag team of Charlie Haas and Shelton Benjamin face the Basham Brothers of Doug and Danny Basham versus the APA of Bradshaw and Farouk versus the champions, Too Cool of Rikishi and Scotty Too Hotty. And once again, I would have liked to have seen it to be a one-on-one tag team contest. In this case, I would have rather seen Too Cool versus the world's greatest tag team. The Bashams and APA, I mean, just for continuity-wise, the Bashams lost their rematch, and the APA lost to the world's greatest tag team. It should have been a one-on-one contest, and, you know, I really have nothing to say about this, man. It's all the same stuff I talked about with the other one. Two of the teams I thought were just thrown in there, like I said, the Bashams and APA, and I love the APA. This had a bit more fast-paced action, and I think was a bit more enjoyable than the other one. But again, like I said, I was quite frankly bored with these and just couldn't wait to get to the next match. And I hate to say that, because there's so much potential for it to be good. I think if they really wanted one of them to be a Fatal 4-Way, this is the one that could have been the Fatal 4-Way, because again, you had better teams on SmackDown. But I think the problem lies in the fact that both were Fatal 4-Ways. And I know the storyline was, it was part of that whole Raw versus SmackDown, who has the better matches. But at the same point in time, you know, at the end of the day, they have to be enjoyable. And I don't see these as so much enjoyable. They were really more like, hey, we have these wrestlers and we have nothing to do with them, so let's put them in tag team matches to get them on Mania. And, you know, because Mania was the payday. So, quite frankly, discontinued the letdown that was Goldberg versus Lesnar. And this really kind of hurt the next match as well. Because you had Victoria, you had for the a hair versus title match for the WWE Women's Championship, you had Molly Holly versus Victoria. Now, the current WWE champion. With the stipulation being if Molly Holly lost, she would lose her hair, whereas Victoria would only lose her title. Anyway, it was a good, solid match. Good women's wrestling back and forth. A great roll-up shock pin by Victoria to pin Molly Holly, and of course the hair. And that part of it was fun. The thing about it is that the crowd was just completely dead at this moment. The Lesnar-Goldberg match and the tag team match had sucked all of the emotion out of the building, and it was very evident. And it would affect the match after this a bit as well. It'd take them some time to get back into it. Which I feel was really sad, because this was, and I wonder if this match got blamed for that, which is showing, because this was a really solid women's match, but again, people were pissed off because of Lesnar and Goldberg. And then because of the Fatal 4-Way Tag Team match. And it's like, you have a crowd that's dead, you need something big to get them back into it. Which is unfortunate for Victoria and Molly Holly, because like I said, they put on a fantastic match, and just a funny segment with, you know, Molly Holly trying to get out of getting her hair cut, but, getting her hair cut. With that being said, like I said, the next match would get the energy back, though it started off a bit slow because of that. As our next match is for the WWE Championship, and we're Kurt Angle challenging the WWE Champion, Eddie Guerrero. Oh my god, I love this match. Second best match of the night, which means take a guess what my favorite match of the night is. And no, I haven't already talked about it yet. Just, oh my god, just two pure wrestlers going at it, and just back and forth contest. Kurt Angle at the top of his game, Eddie Guerrero at the top of his. This is a classic. And this is a great example just of the skill and the wrestling that was part of SmackDown at the time. It was a great showcase for what SmackDown was. And just the back and forth. And then that ending, that wonderful Eddie ending where, you know, Kurt Angle was like gotten the ankle lock on him, and like he gets Kurt Angle out of the ring, and as he's out of the ring, he unties his shoecase, and one of the great things is the ring mic catching, you know, he gets it, and Eddie Guerrero unties his shoe, he's acting, Kurt, like, gets up, and Eddie pops himself up at the perfect time to look at him, and have this look of like, oh no, and he goes, oh shit, and you literally hear him go, oh shit, it's like, oh, that was awesome, and like, he's trying to crawl away, and Kurt Angle goes into the ring, gets the ankle, takes the bait, and he kicks the boot, and slips out, and like, Kurt's like, what? What happened? And he's waving like, no, runs at him, roll up 1, 2, 3, I lie, I cheat, I steal, I am steal, the WWE Champion Eddie Guerrero. It was just a wonderful ending to a match. And one of the things that makes that match memorable, with the other being just the great wrestling and the fact that it was so high impact and had a great pace to it. And you know what? It got the crowd back into WrestleMania. So it's like a 5-star match. It really is. I mean, just I could watch that match all day. Our next match is also, again, because we really had 3 main events. We had the 2 title matches and then we had this, which was a storyline that was going on since Survivor Series, where Undertaker was supposed to return to face his brother Kane. Now, quite frankly, match-wise, this wasn't as good as their first confrontation at WrestleMania 14. That being said, I enjoyed this match, because I enjoyed the showmanship. While these weren't as good as wrestling matches as other matches on the card, the showmanship of the match, and you know, basically the return of the Dead Man as the Dead Man Undertaker was really well set up, had great showmanship. I mean, everybody remembers the image of Undertaker coming back, coming down the entranceway. And, like, Kane just really sold his character throughout this match. I mean, there were a couple botches here and there, and it was kind of slow. And it's not Undertaker's best match at WrestleMania, but the showmanship there can't be denied. And it's just, it is a fun match to at least watch once, I think, at the very least. With that, that brings us to our main event for the evening, as Chris Benoit faces Shawn Michaels and the WWE World Heavyweight Champion Triple H, or in this case, the World Heavyweight Champion Triple H, in a triple threat match for the World Heavyweight Championship. Now, from the beginning, this match had a big match, big fight feel. And from front to back, these three men put on a fucking show. I mean, match of the night, quite frankly. I'm just going to say it here, match of the night. And you had a crowd that was firmly behind Chris Benoit, cheering for him, and it was like, is this going to be the night? Because Chris Benoit was that indie darling, and Chris Benoit was that guy that's like, you know, he's one of us, we feel he's the best pure wrestler in the business, and we want to see him get his due. And we have Eddie Guerrero getting his due, now we just need Chris Benoit. And it's like, at this time, Eddie Guerrero and Chris Benoit were representing all of us who were fans of that WCW undercard, that were screwed by WCW, of those guys getting their fair shot at the top. And now here was the chance of them getting that fair shot at the top in WWE. And, because live podcasting is awesome, folks. And, you know, we wanted to see it happen. We wanted to see him be crowned champion. And my God, I mean, this match, the back and forth, and just great chemistry between all three men. I mean, just great storytelling. The way both Shawn and Triple takes Chris Benoit out. I mean, he just, like, relentless on them, and they finally have to team up to take him out by suplexing him through a table. The poor SmackDown table. Surprisingly, the Spanish announce table doesn't go. It's the SmackDown table. And, you know, oh my God. And here, I'll say this. Benoit sells the table and being out better than Lesnar does at Royal Rumble 2014. Oh God. And just, and the continuation of the story between Shawn and Triple H. Of course, Chris Benoit comes back in and, you know, goes sharpshooter. Eventually gets Triple H in that crossface and just rolls over, can't get out of it, has to tap. It was beautiful. I could watch this match over and over and over again. It was wonderful. I mean, this is, what, 2004? So it's like now over 10 years old. I know what happens in the match, and yet I still jump out and I still find myself cheering during the match for Chris Benoit to win, because there was so much emotion in it. And it's just a wonderful front-to-back match. And your new World Heavyweight Champion is Chris Benoit. And then that beautiful moment of, you know, Eddie Guerrero and Chris Benoit hugging. It's a moment I always remember. And again, that was a moment for us. For those fans, you know, we did go to WCW. Because the best wrestling we were seeing wasn't even the main event of WCW, but it was that undercard. It was the cruiserweight division. It was that mid-card of Booker T, Chris Benoit. You know, Eddie Guerrero was a part of the cruiserweight, but you would be up there as well with those mid-carders of Chris Benoit, Booker T, and people like that. And that's who they represented. And they sort of represented that wrestling community. It's like we went from ECW to WCW, and then all of it went to WWE. And that was like the acknowledgement of our guys. And it was just such a beautiful thing to watch. Now, one thing you haven't heard me talk about yet during this episode is, you know, something I talk about a lot whenever we're talking about Chris Benoit, and that is, you know, them not acknowledging him, and, you know, the fact that if you watch this on the WWE Network, this match isn't even listed on one of the white dots. Which I kind of hate. And, you know, here's my deal on that. And because I've said it plenty of times, I don't want to repeat stuff I've said in other podcasts. Though recently I was listening to the Ross Report with Jim Ross, and he had Jim Cornette on, and they were talking about Benoit. And, you know, Jim Ross is the first person to really give me a reason why to believe that he shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame, and the fact that him saying, like, I know Benoit, and Benoit wouldn't want himself to be a distraction and be in the Hall of Fame. Which, you know, again, Jim Ross is one of those people, like, I will take for the gospel truth. With that being said, though, I still go back to this thing, like, you can't tell me that we can't find a way to at least acknowledge what matches he's a part of. Because it not only is it unfair to Benoit, it's unfair to Triple H and Shawn Michaels. Because this was part of their epic feud, the same feud, though they don't have it on the game, obvious reasons, but still, it was part of this storyline, this epic feud between Triple H and Shawn Michaels that started at SummerSlam 2002 and went all the way to like summer 2004. This is this epic feud storyline of this epic rivalry, and this was a part of it. And I think that's a shame to Shawn Michaels, because this is one of the better matches of that feud. Because it shows, like, how their hatred for each other ultimately cost them both the title. And it was just great storytelling. Not to mention the great storytelling of Chris Benoit and him finally getting the title and how we really enjoyed it. It's a shame. But yeah, I mean, just, oh my god. I was crying the other day watching Chris and Eddie hug. Because it's like, it was the acknowledgement of every fan there. And I mean, you want to talk about the biggest pop of the night. I mean, Benoit comes out, gets a pop. But when he won that title, that place went nuts. I mean, I'm trying to think of, like, oh god. It was like the same type of feeling when Sami Zayn beat Adrian Neville at Our Evolution. It's like, yes, it finally happened. Yes, our dreams have come true. So, yeah. So, that's pretty much all I have to say about WrestleMania 20. Time for the countdown, which is first, top three moves of the night, which is really difficult. There really weren't any standout moves. Number three, the striptease for the Playboy evening gown match, because... Yeah. Number two, John Cena lifting the Big Show for the second time. And, let me take this back. So number three is John Cena with the FU, the second FU. Because I just thought about it in my brain and, like, you know, I really should do it this way. And it's my show, so I can do it. Number two is Eddie Guerrero slipping out of his shoe and then getting the roll-up pin on Kurt Angle. And, for me, number one is Benoit forcing Triple H to tap to the crossface. Just wonderful moments. And, those happen in that same order. That happens to be my top three matches. Number three, John Cena versus Big Show. Number two, Eddie Guerrero versus Kurt Angle. And my number one match of the night is Chris Benoit, Triple H, Shawn Michaels, Triple Threat. I mean, and you know what? That's a great booking. You know, you had a very strong first match of the night to help set the bar for momentum throughout the night. You had, for the most part, solid matches throughout, and then you had two epic world title main events with an epic showmanship Undertaker match thrown in for good measure. Well, not epic, but at least a very good in showmanship. Turn to back, I really enjoy WrestleMania 20, and really, you look at WrestleMania 20, it's a blueprint for what the next 6-7 WrestleManias would be. Or at the very least for the next 4. Yeah, 7, even though the locations would change and, like, around WrestleMania 23, they would start being in stadiums, because 21 and 22 would take place in similar small venues. But at 23, location would change. But if you look at the setup of the matches and the wrestling of the matches, this would be sort of the standard bearer prototype all the way up to WrestleMania 22, or through 27. No, 26. 27 would be where it starts to kind of fall apart, and you get 27 the prototype for what today's WrestleManias are like. So, all in all, I really enjoyed this WrestleMania, and I'll enjoy watching it again. So, at the end of the day, I mean, there are some bad matches that kind of puts you down, particularly that Goldberg-Lesnar match and those tag team matches. But outside of that, just a wonderful Mania, and I thoroughly enjoy watching it. So, WrestleMania 20 gets a 4 out of 5 from me. So that is it for this episode of CMG's Wrestling Reviews. I hope you enjoyed it. I remember there are several ways you can contact the show. One, you can contact us through email at absolutionnetwork@132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork@132@gmail.com. You can also leave us a comment on Stitcher, which you can find by going to www.stitcher.com. Like us and leave us a comment there. And you can always leave a comment on our Facebook page by going to Facebook and searching for The Absolution Network. And always you can leave a comment on the website itself that you can find at www.an.132productions.com. Also, while you're there, make sure you check out all the other 132 Productions content. This, of course, includes the Otaku Momentum, the Anicast with Relic, Shin Tiger Curl with his wrestling, anime, and video game videos, John Ramos with his toku videos, and anime videos for that matter, and then, of course, all my other stuff, which includes Tom's Prerogative, Tom's Top 10, and the Intergalactic Graphic Review. Of course, also check out my other podcasting sites as part of 132 Productions. This, of course, includes Comic Book Crazy, which features my old comic book podcast, Comic Book Crazy, Hexcast, and Spectacular Webs. You can find that at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And, of course, my Godzilla podcasting site featuring the Tokyo SOS podcast, a Godzilla podcast, which you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. And, of course, while you're on any of the sites, make sure you check out all our friends. This, of course, includes Manny J and TWK and the WrestleCast, which right now you can find at Podomatic. I don't have their link up there now because the old site's down, but when the new RVT Entertainment site is up, I will definitely put a link on the sidebar for them. Michael Bailey and Views from the Long Box, Spidey Dude and the Clone Saga Chronicles, Steven Schleicher and the Major Spoilers Podcast, and of course Scott Gardner and the Tutu Freaks Podcasting Network. And that is it for this episode of CMG's Wrestling Reviews. Next time out, I'm going to have special guests Shin Tiger Girl and TWK with me. And we're going to finish out WrestleMania month with a look at one of my favorite WrestleManias of all time. We go to Chicago, folks, as we take a look at WrestleMania 22. So until next time, my wrestling fans, I'm going to be kind of quiet about this because I got people upstairs. But until next time, my wrestling fans, I want you to remember one goddamn thing about me. CMG. I'm the best Jew in the world!
You're wrong and I have and you're all that I need. Each and every day I pray to get to know ya. Please wanna be close to you. Yes, I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you, there's no me or the air that I breathe. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around all around, I believe it. I'm too negative, but deep, but I believe. Yes, I believe. I said I believe. Stand among the feet, one be brought down on one knee. I fight with all of my might and get these demons to flee. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Out of darkness comes light, twilight unto the heights. Crown lights burning up, out of the twilight. So thank you to my God, now I finally got it right. And I fight with all of my heart and all of my soul and all of my mind. And
I'm a fool for holding a ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being. And I sing to my God, songs of love and healing. I want Mashiach now. Time it starts a feeling. What's this feeling? My love will be holding a ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being. And I sing to my God, songs of love and healing. I want Mashiach now.
Stripping away the Lakers and my
heal your soul. You gotta give yourself up and then you become whole. You're a slave to yourself and them don't even know. Them wanna live that fast life, but you're brave.